back to party.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I mean, that's not the way human beings act.
Follow these guys on Twitter at Toucher and Rich.
Boy, did Twitter explode.
Tie scores 13. Marcus Smart over the shoulder pass. Tatum aggressive. Drives down the left side. Two-hand slap as Aaron Baines basically was a wall behind which none of the Cavs could get to Tatum. And Jason Tatum has 9 in the first quarter of Game 7. LeBron tries to spin away from Tatum. Tatum reaches in, knocks the ball off. LeBron out of bounds and turns him over.
Being aggressive. Looking to get up on him. Pushing, poking, bounding him around.
I kind of want to hear what Cedric Maxwell said on the Tatum dunk on LeBron. I don't think that was it that I just played right there.
Hang on. I'll see if I can find it.
Do you have it right there?
Yeah, hang on. Give me a second. Keep
because
talk amongst yourselves.
Not only did you have the dunk, but you had Tatum do the bump against LeBron, which, you know, at the time you're thinking two things. Number one, that dunk was amazing.
All right,
and number two, you're going, all right, what's LeBron going to do now?
I have the whole sequence of the dunk and the three. All right.
Hang on. Let's play a little Cedric Maxwell bingo.
Okay.
Will there be a food item mentioned?
The obvious answer is yes.
Will there be a Cheeto mentioned?
No.
Will he?
No, I was sitting next to Max for most of Game 7. He went away from the food, so I'm going to say no.
He went away from the microphone. Is that true? Yes, Dan.
I'm going Zogasm. No food, no Cheetos.
Okay, so I was thinking Zogasm too. Like, he's going to yell over Sean Grandy while Grandy's doing the play-by-play. He's going to scream. And you don't think there's going to be any kind of food reference? I go food reference, not Cheetos.
No, it's definitely not Cheetos.
All right, let's take a listen.
All right, here we go.
The Celtics have never lost a series that they led 2-0. They're down 4. Smart spins away from Korver, picks up his dribble, bounce pass for Tatum. Tatum left-hand dribble, drives on. Flushes hard on LeBron James. He couldn't block that one.
Hey.
Sometimes you wait for the torch to be passed, and sometimes you say, I better go take it. Jason Tatum just ignited the crowd, and LeBron turns it over for the 7th time. Interior pass picked off by Marcus Morris. Celtics down 2 with the ball, 6:21 to go. Everybody on their feet here in the Garden. Marcus Smart, watched by LeBron James. Jaylen Brown comes to get it left side. They want to go inside to Morris. That's who's got the ball against Korver left side. Double team comes. Kick out Jaylen Brown. Smart shovels to Tatum. Up fake. Steps to his left. Fall away.
Three. Oh!
Got it.
No. Where's the nurse at when you need her? Where is she?
Where's the nurse at?
Where's the nurse at?
When you need her?
George, I'm coming. That was a Sanford and Son deal, I think.
Okay, hang on. So they said that in Sanford and Son?
I think that's a derivative of that. Okay. I think it's one of those things where Max has just gone off Broadway, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what the nurse thing has to do with anything.
His heart attack because he's watching the greatness of Jason Tatum.
All right. Yeah, but, you know, Max didn't have enough time to pontificate over that. I mean, I guess things move so fast.
Yeah.
After the dunk, so I think we were robbed of a Cheeto reference or two. But, that was – Tatum is just awesome. And you know what? Game 7 just proved that he's not afraid and he's going to be a superstar. It doesn't say that Jaylen Brown is not going to be one, but it does say that Tatum is.
Yes. The fact that he is assimilated himself this quick and he is nails in a game like that, that's absolutely right.
Well, you're right about Jason Tatum. Not Jason Tatum, but Jaylen Brown. And that is when he gets cold, he gets – cold. It is a streak.
It clearly affects him.
He's extremely streaky. And I'm just now starting to notice that. Let's go to Dan. Dan, what's up, man? You're on Toucher and Rich.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
So, Rich, dude, nothing before the Celtic point. Your little rant about the Star Wars movie.
Yes.
I didn't see the movie, but I got spoiled by someone about it.
Don't spoil anything.
No. I'm not going to. But I'm just saying, as far as, like, the cartoons go, they are pretty much worth it to watch. They're pretty awesome.
But I don't want to have to watch a cartoon about Star Wars to understand what happened in the movie about Star Wars. Like, I like watching the movie. Like, if that's the case, what a horrible misjudgment by the makers of that film. For people who, like me, I'm not going to watch a cartoon to go, all right, what the hell's happening here? The timeline is completely off.
Well, I mean, you have to watch other stuff to find out about other characters. Like you're going to have to read the books about.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to read books. I hate books.
Yeah, neither do I. So, like, episode 7, you know, when, like,
books are bad.
I don't like books.
Books are bad.
I want to sit in front of a stupid screen for 2 hours and drool. That's what I want. I don't want to read a book to understand what just happened in a dumb Han Solo movie.
Yeah, you really shouldn't have to study for a movie.
No, I don't want to.
That shouldn't happen.
I hate that. And that's like some people say, well, you know, is the movie's not as good as the book. Well, you know what? I didn't read the book. All right, so I don't care. I want to judge this on its own merits.
Now, if it's an Avengers thing and there are movies before that, I kind of get that.
Because it's a movie.
It's linear. It's, yes. You know, you have the evolution of all these characters. Right, I get it.
I'm not going to blame a movie for making a sequel and not seeing the original one and going, well, I don't know what's happening. In the sequel, I didn't see the first one. No, that's an expectation. I'm not going to go to a movie and send somebody go, oh, the reason you didn't get anything that happened was because there's like a book and a cartoon you had to watch. That's stupid. Like, I mean, it's Star Wars too. It's not like something that was based on a cartoon. This is Star Wars. I'm way too old to be watching these cartoons. That just kind of pissed me off. It was like the end of the movie. Like, that made no sense whatsoever. And who knows if even the cartoons make sense? Like, who cares? All I know is that Marcus Smart is not going to be here much longer if he ends up getting the kind of money that he wants. Because according to the Jackie McMullen article that came out, the Celtics are not willing to pay more than what's being whispered about. And that's the $12 to $14 million. That's what apparently his market value is. And you know what? If Danny Ainge is not going to pay that, then I trust that either A, Danny knows... Much like Bill Belichick's been very good at judging the market value of certain players, he knows that he's not going to get that kind of money. Or B, he realizes that Marcus Smart, as special as he is, they might be able to find another guy who can fill that role pretty close to what Marcus Smart was able to. And that's something that I have faith in Danny, and I have faith in... I mean, he's an excellent defensive player, but I mean... Is he generational? Are you losing out on a generational player?
What you have to ask yourself is, because you're not going to replace what Marcus Smart brings. There's no one currently out there, and I don't think anyone in college either, that's going to step in and do what Marcus Smart does, simply because there are only a handful of guys in the league that do that. The question is Smart the difference? If you lose Smart off this roster, you're not going to replace what he does. Does that cost you an NBA championship, or does that cost you a playoff game or two?
You see,
that's what you have to ask yourself.
I believe right now on this team, he is a major difference. Like, he is a DNA changer. I've said that for a while.
Sure.
They're a different team when he's on the court. But do I have faith that if somebody offers him a ridiculous amount of money and he goes elsewhere, that Danny Ainge will be able to find somebody and Brad Stevens will be able to coach up that person to make them 80% of Marcus Smart?
See,
Maybe. I have faith in them. Why should I doubt?
See,
should I doubt Danny Ainge?
You know this. I've always been a huge Marcus Smart guy. I think they need to bring him back to really complete the picture.
Not for more than $15 million a year.
You add, obviously, there's a price to I think what you've learned over the last hour and 12 minutes is I don't think anyone's going to step up and offer him 4 years and $60 million like he wants. I think that the Celtics are going to get off cheap. I mean, they're not going to pay him $6 million, but they may have to pay him 10 or 11, and I'm fine with that. But I think in order to complete the picture, you need Marcus Smart on this team. That's how much of an impact he has.
Patrick, good morning. You're on Touch and Rich.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up?
Hey, three things. Number one, I watched Solo. It was good. Certainly better than Last Jedi, but Last Jedi is a low bar. Number two, I was thinking, when I was watching this series, I kind of almost had this feeling that LeBron was almost putting on a show that, you know, he's near the end, he's near this sort of existential crisis with Cleveland, and then all of a sudden, hey, guess what, he's back in the finals. I don't know what you guys want to think about that. Number three, do you guys see now with, you know, Gordon Hayward and Kyrie coming back, do you see a repeat performance? Do you see something kind of thrown out the window?
Oh, I mean, with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, I mean, how many times were you watching this game and saying, boy, they could have used him? I mean, Kyrie Irving, more than anything,
they needed a go-to shooter. Yeah, the Celtics needed a three-point shooter.
Yep.
Irving and Hayward certainly are that. And they needed a guy to step up in the last 5 minutes and take over the game.
And that's Kyrie
Irving. Score down the stretch.
Yes.
Kyrie's a killer.
Yep.
When it comes down to this. You've seen it in his career, especially in the NBA Finals. That's a guy who will get to the basket and finish around the rim.
And
he's guaranteed offense when it matters.
And Danny Ainge made a great point yesterday that we have been saying for a while now about Kyrie Irving. And it's something that during this miracle run that the Celtics have been on here in the postseason, people tend to forget.
I mean,
I get a kick out of the fact that everybody, I mean, I everywhere I go, people don't think that we need Kyrie or need Gordon Hayward. I mean, I have a much longer memory and remember how great those guys were and what an effort it took us to get them. And I also remember how great they are and how young they are still. So we need Gordon and Kyrie, absolutely need them. I mean, if this playoff run and all the series of the playoffs didn't show that, then I don't know what does.
All right, I know we're running late, but I'm sorry. Jason, I'm sorry, CJ, hang on one sec. Let's go to Jason. Jason, what's up, man? You're on Touch and Rich.
Rich, I think you're out of control. I mean, does it really matter that the Celtics lost in Game 7? This was all gravy. Whoever got through was going to get bounced by Golden State in four games. LeBron's going down in four games. Did you really want it to be the Celtics getting embarrassed?
Yeah, I did. Because that game was winnable. That's why. It would have shown me something.
Golden State.
Well, sure, Golden State would have won. We know that. It probably would have been four games. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
But I want more basketball. And I think that this team was better than what we saw.
If you get blown out in Game 7, you get blown out in Game 7. If you lose by 20 points, then fine.
But that game was theirs for the taking.
I agree with you, Rich. It was there for the taking. Yeah, they probably would have lost to Golden State. I mean, it's obvious. Golden State has four superstars that they roll out there. Four all-stars. The Celtics don't match up. Golden State's better at what you do than you are. They're basically the same thing that you do, only they're, you know, however much percentage better. But in theory, if you have a double-digit lead on your own home floor in Game 7, you should win. If you have the lead, they were up 72-71 in the fourth quarter of Game 7. They should have won that game.
All right, we have Ashrod Blakely from NBC Sports Boston on with us to talk a little bit more about the Marcus Smart situation and what this team's going to do here in the offseason.
Toucher and Rich.
Self-help shenanigans.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, you know, it's, yeah, we hopefully we'll have an expensive roster. And I think that we've been managing the payroll pretty well up to this point, and we know that there's some really big, tough decisions going forward.
98.5 of Sports Hub, it's Toucher and Rich. And Sunday's Cleveland Cavaliers-Boston Celtics Game 7. Highest ratings ever for a playoff game for ESPN. It ties. They've only touched that point once before, and that was Game 7 of the 2012 Miami Heat-Boston Celtics Eastern Conference Finals. How about that? So it was the highest ratings ever, or tied the highest ratings ever for a NBA playoff game. So a lot of people got to watch Jeff Green go nuts. And unfortunately,
you want to talk about being bothered. Jeff Green has meandered his way through a decade-long NBA career.
How do you let Jeff Green beat you?
Wasting all of that talent. And before everyone jumps, yes, I understand he had open-heart surgery. I get that. But
he'll always be the guy that's not Kendrick Perkins.
Right.
You're not Kendrick Perkins. That trade was not worth it.
I think all the teams that have employed him over 10 years would realize that he has underachieved massively for the talent he has.
Except in Game 7 against
the Celtics. And he was the guy who was the running buddy for LeBron in Game 7. That's a kick in the ass.
Well, let's get to Ashrod Blakely, who I wonder if he's in the same boat that we are. Ashrod, okay, so this morning, from NBC Sports Boston, of course, Ashrod Blakely. This morning, my sentiment is, of course, this team overachieved. It's been an amazing season. It's been a lot of fun. But my God, that Game 7 was theirs for the taking, and they just couldn't pull it off.
And that is the stomach-churning reality of where this team is. I mean, it would have been okay if, let's say, LeBron had a great game and a bunch of other guys played well for Cleveland and the Celtics, you know, had a typical game but just couldn't quite get over the hump. But no. They suck.
Yeah,
they had their absolute worst game of the playoffs and the most meaningful game, significant game of the playoffs. And to me, that's the reality of what happened. I don't blame fans for being upset and not, you know, kind of piling on. Now, we had a really good season, guys. Mm-hmm. Bandwagon. Yeah, that's true. But the way it ended, it shouldn't have ended.
Yeah.
It should not have ended that way. And I'm totally with you guys. It to see Jeff Green play the way a number top five pick should play, after a decade of being in the NBA? Yeah, that was not fun.
Yeah.
Not fun at all.
That hurt. And the one thing that you try to think about, and it's tough right now because the wound's still fresh, is that this team's going to be unbelievable when they're healthy. I mean, the beginning of next season, obviously, they are going to be somebody. It's going to be them and Golden State, I got to think, where you're going to be looking at these two teams. That depends on where LeBron goes, of course. But as of right now, they're going to be the team to be favored in the East. You would have to think so. But they do have some decisions to make. Let's go ahead and start with Marcus Smart, because he's an unrestricted free agent. He's a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
And he is somebody that right now the Celtics have a – I mean, $6 million is what they would owe him unless he found a more money somewhere else. And what we're hearing right now is that the market value is somewhere between $12 and $14 million. He thinks he's more than that. Apparently, the Celtics don't want to pay a lot more than that. How do you see this ending up, and what would you be willing, if you were Danny Ainge, to pay for Marcus Smart?
I'd tap out at 15. For Marcus Smart. And even that makes me a little bit uncomfortable and queasy. But you know what this guy does for your team. You know what he means. And if you are seriously about winning a title next year, which I think the Celtics are, when you look at their roster, you look who's coming back with Kyrie and Gordon, you look at the experience that your young guys have gained in this playoff run, you keep Marcus Smart in fold, you become the team everyone in the East is trying to beat next year. And that is a role that I think the Celtics, their ownership is willing to pay the price to make that happen.
All right, so how much do you think that would, because that's, I mean, if you, he'd probably want 15, they'd probably offer him for like 4 years, right? Wouldn't you think? It would be like 4 years, $15 million, and I'm with you. I think that that's the most you give him. What confidence would you have that if for some reason he was offered more than that and they let him go, that Danny would be able to find a guy that could fill that spot and Brad Stevens would be able to coach him up to find somebody who could maybe even do 80% of what Marcus Smart did?
Well, I mean, I don't think you're going to find a guy like that, to be candid with you, because Marcus Smart, what he does, you really can't put a statistical label on. I mean, he's an intangibles guy. I mean, look at Game 7. He goes 1-for-10, which is just a brutal shooting night. And then you see that when he was on the floor, they were +2. How the hell does that happen?
Yeah.
How do you miss that many shots and yet your team actually scored more points when you were on the floor than not? He's that type of player, and those guys are very hard to find, which is why a guy can shoot as poorly as he has throughout his career and yet still be someone that a team like the Boston Celtics covet.
I'm trying to figure out now what Terry Rozier's value is, Sherrod. Obviously, looking at it, he'd be a great trade chip for a first-round pick or something like that. At least he was up until the last week. Horrible Game 5, horrible Game 7, really good Game 6. Well, what is his value now should the Celtics try to dangle him out there?
I think it's gonna be difficult. But the thing about Terry Rozier is this. I look at his entire body of work, not just, you know, two of the last three games. And if you look at what he was able to do when he was given the keys to the car, he did well. I mean, by and large, I mean, he is a guy that can clearly score at a fairly high level in this league. His ability to run a team is still a work in progress. I think he still has a tremendous amount of value because I don't think people are going to necessarily lock in solely on what happened the last two, three games, but they're going to look at what was he able to do by and large when he had a chance to run his own team. And so, to me, Rozier, he's a guy that's going to get a lot of interest. He had a lot of interest leading up to the trade deadline this past year, and that's going to continue in the offseason. The Celtics, they've got some tough decisions to make with him, with Marcus Smart. We're not even talking about potential extension for Kyrie Irving. So this is going to be interesting to see how the Celtics, how the ownership group approaches this offseason, because really, yeah, they've got the pieces to be a championship caliber team right now. Are they willing to put the resources behind making that happen? That's going to be the big underlying question this offseason.
Okay, so Sherrod, Aaron Baines is an unrestricted free agent right now. Obviously, we know his value. I think that when he was on the court, I mean, he was one of the few guys that could pull down a rebound there near the end of the series. What do you think his value is? Do you think that Danny would try to re-sign him? The future of Aaron Baines on this team?
Well, I know they want to re-sign him. They made that absolutely crystal clear to him in their exit interviews that he is a guy that they want to keep in the fold because, let's face it, this Celtics defense went to another level this past season, and his ability to man the middle, allowing Al Horford to not be so relied upon from a defensive standpoint, was one of the big reasons why the Celtics were able to have their this kind of success. So he is a guy that they definitely want to re-sign. But you know how it is this time of year. You want this, you want that, you want that. It's like a little kid who goes into the toy shop. They want everything they see. But you as mom, I mean, dad, mm-hmm. you know that's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to be able to get every single toy in the shop that you want. Aaron Baines, I think, may wind up being one of those toys that Danny Ainge would love to keep in the fold, but not be able to, because I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be in demand, particularly with his ability to now stretch the floor as a stretch big, which, and again, every time I see him shoot, it just doesn't feel right that he's raising up for a three-pointer, and yet it goes in more often than not. He's a guy that's going to get a lot of attention because of what he can do defensively, his ability to stretch the floor now, and just his just overall demeanor as a player. He doesn't mind playing 15, 20 minutes a night if that's all you need from him. But you know you're going to get great play from a guy who's not going to grumble about playing time.
All right, and finally, Aisharod, Danny Ainge had a kind of an interesting answer yesterday when he was asking about the offseason. It sounded like he was going to originally say something along the lines of, I don't think we need to make many moves, but then he also hedged his bets by saying, but then again, I didn't realize that, you know, last season we were going to have 11 completely new players on this roster. So, I mean, mm-hmm. he left the door open. So when you think of, like, big moves, the first thing you think of is Anthony Davis. Now, he's eligible for a Supermax now because he made that All-NBA team.
Yep.
And I used to think that now there's no way that you know, he would leave because he'd make all this money. But then there's another school of thought, and that is that New Orleans is not going to want to pay that amount of money for Anthony Davis, which would make a trade more likely. Where do you stand on this, and do you see any chance of the Celtics trying to work something out with New Orleans?
I see the Celtics asking the way I think any team would ask, and I'd see New Orleans looking at the Celtics asset and giving like a nanosecond of thought. But then they'd realize, oh, crap, we just got out of the first round of the playoffs. He was a big reason why we got out of the first round of the playoffs. And if we got rid of him now, our already small fan base would just absolutely leave in droves. I don't see them trading him. His talent, his impact on winning, the fact that they're finally doing something other than just playing 82 regular season games. You're going to get DeMarcus Cousins back next season. They're going to be even better, I think. There's not a whole lot of incentive for New Orleans. And the other factor in all this, he wants to be there. That's what separates him from a lot of guys in those type of small market cities. He genuinely wants to be there. I just can't see the Celtics putting together a package that would be enticing enough for them to part ways with Anthony Davis. I really don't.
All right, Aisharod, it has been a fun season, and I'm sure this offseason will be somewhat interesting. The Marcus Smart stuff is obviously what everyone's going to be keeping their eyes on the most. But thanks for all your work during the Celtics season on NBC Sports Boston. Appreciate it.
No problem, fellas. Take
it easy. Talk to you, man. All right. If you're feeling a little bit down about how everything ended, there is a gentleman here who is going to join us right after John Wallach's headlines, who might put a little smile on the old face. Mr. Dan Roach, Captain Positivity. Let's see how he can spin all this. I also want to get his take on David Price and what happened yesterday, because David Price can't get out of his own way.
What do you think the spin's going to be? What do you think?
I actually think Dan's going to call him out. I don't think Dan is a big fan of David Price the person. I think he likes him as a pitcher.
We're talking baseball. That's all we're doing. We're not talking off field. We're talking between the lines.
Understood.
What do you think the spin's going to be?
I think he's going to be honest. I don't think he likes David Price the person. I think he likes him as a baseball player.
Yeah.
I think it pains him to have to say anything bad and negative about David Price, but I also don't think that it truly pisses him off.
Price has pitched really well the last four games. Why does everyone have to be so negative, Rich?
I'm telling you.
My God, can't you just have a little fun?
I know Dan better than you do, John. We're tight.
All right.
We've broken bread together. We've arm wrestled.
Very happy for both of you.
We've taken walks on the beach shirtless.
How about that?
All right, 617-779-0985. We will get to that right after John Wallach's headlines. 98.5,
the Sports Hub. Toucher and Rich. Woo! Y'all gonna make me go Dan Roach. On BZ, on BZ. Y'all gonna make me bug the coach. On BZ, on BZ. Y'all gonna make me quote some stats. On BZ, on BZ. Y'all gonna make me bust some caps. On BZ, on BZ. All you local sports.
sports anchors, maybe you should have heard. You're about to get served by this baseball nerd. Sean McAdam just quit it. You're done with. You're through. I'm on Channel 4, son. You're on 852. I'm the best baseball guy. That's what everyone knows. Hey, Peter Abraham, I just kicked you in your Boston Globe. Hey, Shaughnessy, you're old. I read you in college. Why's your hair red? Because I just burned you with knowledge. Yo, John Tomasi, you ain't got no posse. You look like an extra on Joni Loves Chachi. Gary Tangway, we all know that you don't drive a truck. Well, I drive a Miata and don't give a whoa. Y'all gonna make me go Dan Roach. On BZ, on BZ. Y'all gonna make me bug the coach. On BZ, on BZ.
Bug Bunny.
Y'all gonna make me quote some stats. On BZ, on BZ. Y'all gonna make me bust some caps. On BZ, on BZ. Shout out to my BZ posse. What's up, D-Wade? What's up, Steve Burton? Or as we like to call him, Burton. Yo, Keller at Large, a.k.a. the Monopoly guy. Peace out, Jack Williams. I like unicorns.
.985 is Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich.
The music before you bring Dan in is just fantastic. You know, you have that great song that Dan did, and then we have this leading into Dan.
Well, I mean, when I think Dan Roach,
yeah.
I think Damn That River by Allison Chains.
Sure you do. Like everybody does.
I think heroin.
All of a sudden, I'll hear like that rap song, and yeah. I'll be like, like the real song of it. What's the real song of that?
It's DMX.
Yeah, and I hear it, and I'm like, oh, I know that. Why do I know that song? And all of a sudden, I'll be like, y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
Is that what you like? By the way, I like the hat. I like the hat you got. You
know, Cafe Martin.
Yeah, our good friend, good.
John Martin, who is battling ALS. Mm-hmm. And you can get a hat if the John Martin GoFundMe page. And I think it's $25. Great hat, and it's all for a good cause.
So, yeah, he was a Nesson cameraman who is dealing with ALS right now.
Yeah, covered the Red Sox for a long, long time and the Bruins. When I was doing the sideline reporting in our weekly Red Sox show, John was there all the time. So we would hang out and, you know, just a good family man, loved the game of baseball and just a good guy.
I ordered one I think about a week ago, but it takes like 2 weeks.
Take a while, yeah. I think mine took 3 weeks. Yeah. So
it takes a little bit, but that's awesome. Okay, so you were at both game 6, game 7, you were in Cleveland, you were here, you were there yesterday for the postmortem with the Boston Celtics. What would you read on game 7? Just real quick, because we've been talking all morning about how we've been feeling that they gave that one away. Despite what everything that happened this season, it being a great season, that was a winnable game, and they blew it.
I felt like, first of all, I go back to game 6 in Cleveland. Watching warm-ups, in particular, Jaylen Brown was so locked in during warm-ups, more so than any time I had seen him all through the playoff run. And there was one thing I posted on Twitter where he hit and took like 8 threes in a row. And it was just, he was just moving and going in and coming back. He was so pumped out. And then he pumped in 15 in that first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of went away from him. That I thought the Celtics gave a lot, maybe more physically than they could have, should have in game 6, trying to win game 6. And I think it cost them at the end of game 7. I think they were exhausted by the fourth quarter. But I also think that it was one of those runs where the carriage turned into a pumpkin. You know, they'd be able to make all these shots. All these guys had so much confidence that one of them was all of a sudden going to start making shots. Terry Rozier, he had done it before. Marcus Morris had done it before. They all thought that they could make a shot, and it just didn't happen, but they just couldn't get it done.
Well, two things at the end of the game that I think stood out were, well, other than, of course, the horrible shooting, was why wasn't the ball getting to Al Horford more? Because he started off so well at the beginning of the game, and why wasn't the ball getting to Jason Tatum more?
Yeah, I think if you're going to criticize Brad Stevens for one thing in that game, it would have been at some point to call a timeout in the fourth quarter and say, guys, and there was a play. Remember there was a play where they took the extra pass and it ended up with a dunk in that fourth quarter in the second half, and it was beautiful. You were like, wow, that's the passing that we know. They stopped doing what got them those three-pointers in that fourth quarter, which was take the ball to the hole. Start it with Al Horford, find a way to get it and drive. And they had so many opportunities because Cleveland, it was already in the penalty situation at free throws, so they would have been able to go to the line.
Yeah.
I thought they were all trying to play hero ball and win the best back game by themselves because they had done it in the past.
And they were shooting it up way too high up in the shot
but
clock.
But I go back to, if I say to you, all right, when you tell me who's your closer, that's the way I look at it when it comes to a game four or a game seven, rather, in the fourth quarter, or any game in the fourth quarter. Who's your closer? for the Houston Rockets, right? It's James Harden, right? It's clear and everything. He's your go-to guy. And then we saw Eric Gordon a little bit during these playoffs do that too. If you're the Golden State Warriors, who is it? It's Curry or it's Durant or it's Klay Thompson. It's one of those.
Sure.
If it's the Cleveland Cavaliers, we all know it's LeBron. He's legendary for it. If it's the Celtics, you had at best a third option out there during this playoff run. At best. You know, and that was a raw rookie in Tatum.
But
they didn't
one,
have that closer that every, all four of those, all three of those other teams had.
But you found one, a guy who was hot and a guy who has proven in the playoffs that he can be at least as close to a closer as you can get. And that's Jason Tatum. I mean, he was your best
he's
option.
He's so raw that
Understood.
Maybe he just wasn't ready for that in a game seven. To think about that, Rich, that people say, well, should they have had a playoff run or not a playoff run? They went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And you look at the intensity of the first round against Milwaukee, it was nothing at all compared to Game 6. When they went into Cleveland in Games 3 and 4, that crowd, that was a wake-up call to the Celtics. They were like, good Lord, looking around, it was so loud in that building, and it's LeBron, and here we go, that they didn't adjust really until Game 4 late, and they started to turn into a team that, okay, now our confidence is there. We can figure this out. If you heard a lot of them, you know, Jaylen Brown said after the game, I was too fast. I was trying to do everything fast, and it took them a while to get it. So this run, imagine this Game 7 against the, you know, the greatest player of our era and one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. What these guys can learn from it. And I don't know if Tatum or Brown or anybody was really ready for what was there in facing LeBron.
And that's why I love Jason Tatum. And I think that if all the players, we learn the most about him. And that is when the pressure was at its strongest. When you're playing Game 7 against LeBron James, he didn't wilt. I mean, he stepped up to the occasion, and that's what the great ones do.
Yeah, and if you're Danny and Brad, you're like, wow.
And I'm not. It's not taking anything away from Jaylen Brown. It's not taking anything away from those other guys. They're still young. You can still use that excuse. And this is hopefully, as Brad said, a learning experience. You learn through the pain. And even Aaron Baines was talking about when his team lost to Miami in the finals.
Yeah, they used 13.
It. Yeah.
What did they do the next year?
They came back and won it. And he said a lot of it had to do with we lost and we learned basically how to come from that and be stronger the next time. And you hope that that's the case. But you did learn that Jason Tatum's a stud, and the guy seems to be ready.
And the other thing that I think Baines made a point of yesterday, which I thought was pretty remarkable, you know, and again, it's, you know, these guys are all coming off this high of this run, is Baines said, you know, when talking about comparing the Spurs and the team that he won a ring with in 14 to the Celtics team, I asked him, you know, why he felt like this group, because he said this particular group has that type of, you know, togetherness, drive, unselfishness that San Antonio had. And I said, why do you feel that way? And you know, who's your guy? And he said, you know, Tim Duncan. We all know Tim Duncan. He compared Al Horford to Tim Duncan, unselfishness and the way he cares about his teammates, doesn't have to be the guy, defense and everything else. He compared those two players, which I thought was pretty remarkable. And I know everybody rips Al Horford for everything that he does, but the guy brings so much to this basketball team that I think we found out a lot about him, and you found out a lot about what this team is made of. And now you, if you're Danny and Brad, you're going forward like, okay, we just got to do this, 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 and this to keep it going.
All right, 617-779-0985. Dan Roach, who is at both games in studio with us, and he is going to take your calls. On top of that, we will talk a little bit about David Price in a little bit, which I'm looking forward to his opinion on that.
Oh, it's me too. Me too.
We'll do that as well,
and
right?
You're not going to punch me in the nose. Just well, for my opinion.
Well, I mean, listen, if you get me
I
angry.
I already know what your opinion is, Dan.
Whatever you do, don't battle me on the timeline being incorrect in the Solo movie, because it's off,
I hung up and called the police right after I heard that.
Okay. Did you see Solo?
Right after I heard you say you were going to punch me in the nose. I'm like, I got an issue here.
Well, I mean, only if you say something that
I
makes
know.
Me.
So I say it just to drive you crazy.
I wouldn't punch you in that awesome nose of yours. You're a good guy. All right, 617-779-0985. We'll be right back.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
LeBron tries to spin away from Tatum. Tatum reaches in, knocks the ball off LeBron out of bounds, and turns him over.
Being aggressive, looking to get up on him. Pushing, poking, bounding him around.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Rough Radio.
We got Dan sitting in this morning with us, with me and John. Matt, you're on Toucher and Rich.
Fritos and beef, boys.
Fritos and beef, sir.
Fritos and beef.
Pasta.
So this morning I was pretty upset. I was coming in. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to listen to Fred be all depressed. Rich P.F. all depressed, and then I heard that Dan Roach was coming on, and absolutely made my week.
Fantastic.
That's right. So
how
Dan,
about that, Danny?
Well, let's make it an APD, huh?
All positive day. I don't think you want to do that in a day like today. I mean, you can listen, there's a lot to be positive about. We all agree.
But I get what you're saying, Rich, and yeah. I was listening to you guys when I was coming in. I get that that's that anger. And there was that anger in the locker room after the game, and there was that anger yesterday down in Waltham.
Even because, Danny said it.
They were all like, dang it.
Well, Danny was like, this one was ours for the – even he admitted it.
It was right there in front of them. They had it set up. In that first quarter, the Garden was electric. You know, they're up by 12. Here we go. They're going to blow them out. I thought they were going to blow them out simply because – the average margin of victory in Cleveland was 16 for the home team. The average margin in Boston was 17 for the home team coming in. And they had everything set up perfectly for them. And then when you get to the fourth quarter, it's a one-point game or whatever. You're like, okay.
That's probably
they're going up against the will of LeBron. Forget it.
You get to the last 5 minutes, and if you're not up by double digits against that guy, you're screwed.
All right, Brian, what's up, man? You're on Toucher and Rich.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, Danny Roach, dude, I didn't even know you was going to be on. And so, you know, with the rare opportunity, I want to say, dude, you are awesome, man. Love you, guy.
Well, thanks. I didn't know I was going to be on either, so until 6 o'clock.
Good little surprise. You know, this is actually the first time I called into you guys. Would have been nice to be able to say what's up to Freddie, too. But anyway.
Well, thank you.
Listen, to anybody giving the Celtics a pass, I am steamed right now, okay? What was it? Whatever, a few minutes left of the game, 3 offensive rebounds in a row, 3 three-pointers missed. You don't even stop or slow down to reset the offense. The minute that happened, I said, we just choked. And that's what it was, a choke job. We had that game in hand. If we had got blown out, you know, swept or something, okay. You know, it was great that we made it that far. We had that game. I do not give them a pass. Anybody that does, you are a moron.
Basically, he said, hey, it's great to talk to you, and you're a moron.
You're not giving him a pass.
I get what he's saying. I mean, it was right there for the taking. Yeah, if I was Brad, I would have called a couple of timeouts if I needed it to set them up and say, guys, what has gotten us to this point? What's made us successful? Go out and get it. But Brad would say that, you know, that's shots that they had confidence in all year long. And if guy's got an open shot and he's open, he's got an open look, take it. That's kind of what made Brad with those guys.
Kevin O'Connor, who writes for The Ringer, I like his writing a lot. We've had him on the show a bunch of times. He made a good point. He goes, you know, as much as you want Jason Tatum to be the guy to take the shot, because he was the only guy who obviously was making shots. He was on fire. He was, as you said, as close to a closer as you're going to have on the Celtics during Game 7. And as much as you want the ball to get to him and him to shoot it, that is completely against everything Brad Stevens' system is. And that is, if you're open, you take the shot, whether your name is Marcus Smart and can barely hit a three, or your name is Terry Rozier, who's been as cold as could possibly be during Game 7, or Marcus Morris, who couldn't hit a shot as well, or even Jaylen Brown.
Which leads me to what I'd like to ask both of you about this Celtics team going forward. Just what you said. We're going to talk about that. All right?
That's a big market tease, ladies and gentlemen.
First, we're going to pause for headlines, and then we'll be back.